Hello, you're listening to the Leo Bonomo radio show. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you happen to be. I'm very privileged today to have Sarah Tyler Waters, a trance medium and spiritual strategist, with me, a good friend of mine. I've known Sarah for quite a long time, haven't we, Sarah?
Yeah, long time, yeah. Leo.
And Sarah, as I said, is a trance medium, and her control or guide is called Master Chow. And Sarah, would you like to tell us something a little bit about Master Chow and how you got into trance mediumship?
I got into trance mediumship by accident, in many ways. I trained to be a mental medium, so traditional clairvoyance, proof of survival, and was at the time drifting in and out of trance without knowing that was what I was doing. Yeah. I was sitting in a circle with a lovely, lovely group of ladies who, fortunately, several of them had done some trance training previously, so recognised what I was doing, even though the circle leader perhaps maybe didn't want to discuss it, whichever way.
Yeah.
And one day they just said, you have to come with us. We're going down to Kent. You've got to come. I'll pick you up this time. Be ready. And took me down to Kent for a one-day workshop being run by a woman who was a trance medium professionally.
Yes.
And she sort of sat me in the chair and said, well, just do what you do. And went into trance. Someone came through and spoke very beautifully. And she said, well, yeah, you're a trance medium. And that was sort of like, ah, okay. And then it was a choice then, because doing the trance and doing the clairvoyance side by side and the training and that. So I opted to go to the College of Psychic Studies to train formally as a trance medium, though I was working on the platform at the time as a mental medium as well.
Yeah.
And that's really where I got into it, was just handing over to the process. And Chow didn't arrive for a couple of years. He was the Oriental gentleman in the background.
Yes.
And I had lots of others. I worked with a lot of archangels, and I had a beautiful Tibetan monk that used to speak through me. And then one night I sat in the cabinet, the trance cabinet, which your readers may or may know what that is. Mm. And Chow stepped forward, introduced himself to the room, and hasn't left since.
Almost like a squatter.
Pretty much. There is a little bit of... in many ways we have a closer relationship than most marriages in that sense. I mean, it's a proper bond. And I've got to know more about him over the years, and we've kind of built a really, really good trust-based working relationship.
Yeah, because trance involves a lot more trust in some ways than mental mediumship, doesn't
it? Completely, because I'm handing over everything to him. So if your listeners are familiar with the idea, then, you know, ostensibly me, myself, who I am, I step out of the way. I enter into an altered state of consciousness. Chow, therefore, uses my mind, my body, my energy system. Yeah. And I'm not in control of those things while he is talking or healing or working. So I do have to trust him implicitly. I also have to use common sense. You know, I have to be sure I'm in the right frame of mind, I'm in a safe environment, and do all of the prelim. But once he arrives, then I have to trust him to take care of me.
Yeah, I noticed one thing that I've seen you do at my circle, and you've been a wonderful guest a few times, is that on occasions Master Chow has so much control that you can actually walk around, which I found quite amazing at first, because although I drift into trance a little bit here or there, I've noticed when addresses that come through, certainly when I started, I had to grip the rostrum because I felt
the
I
swaying.
Might fall over.
Yeah. In the lighter states, particularly in channeling, which is a different state to trance, you will get a lot of that swaying because of the different level of control that they take over the physical body. So because Chow actually comes right the way into the physical, this is why he can hold people's hands. This is why he can stand and move around, particularly when he's doing healing, when we do trance healing.
Yeah.
Because they are taking control of the body. But the other side of that is also the level of awareness I have.
Mm.
So I have spatial awareness.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of aware of the things, the objects around me, if you like. Yes. So a sense of the floor, a sense of the chair.
Yes.
But not the conversation, and no control or influence over the conversation.
Yeah.
So that allows him to move around.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because obviously it would be quite dangerous if there was a trip hazard anything like that.
Oh, don't. They've dumped me on the floor, Leo.
Yeah.
I mean, they've literally dumped me on the floor once just to see what would happen. And this happened in the classroom environment.
Mm.
The cabinet was on one side of the room, and we were all sat on the other side of the room as students, and we were working one at a time, and I'd already gone into trance. He was already sat there with me.
Yes.
And the Robin, my lovely teacher at the time, who sadly passed, said, oh, it's your turn, thinking Chow would talk from the chair where he already was. No, he stood up and he walked over to the cabinet to sit in the chair that was in the cabinet.
Yes.
Missed the chair deliberately and landed me on the floor.
Wow.
And of course they had to just stand and watch me do it.
Yes.
Couldn't interfere. Hits the floor, crosses his legs and carries on talking without any interruption at all. And I come back to find myself on the floor, other side of the room, and my back killing me because he hit the radiator on the way down.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, thanks. And afterwards, you know, Spirit just said to me, we just needed to see what you would do. It was a test to see whether I'd come out of the trance when I hit the floor or not. So they do promise they will never do it again.
Well, that's good, because I imagined that you would come back. You'd be in quite a state of shock and disorientation, but it's wonderful, actually. Yeah.
And that's what they were testing.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there anything you want to advertise, your Voices of Spirit site, any of the courses?
Oh, no, they can just go and look at the site and see what we do. I think if they enjoy listening to Chow when he comes forward to talk, then he has his own blog, which is askchow.wordpress.com. And he has his own Twitter feed, which people really enjoy, which is just at askchow. And that's a nice way of keeping in touch with his philosophy, his teaching, his kind of ideas. So they can follow that, follow me, and see what we're doing.
That's fantastic. I'll do something on my blog with that and put the links on, because, again, I'm sure that they'll find that interesting.
Cool.
Okay, so what we're going to do, listeners, is we're going to give Sarah a little chance to go into trance, Chow to go forward, and we'll be right back in a moment.
Okay.
Master Chow, how are you?
Oh, still dead.
Still dead. Wonderful. I love your sense of humour.
Oh, well, if you cannot laugh, you cannot live.
Exactly, absolutely. And we're doing an interview, and there's lots of listeners that will be listening to you, and we have some questions for you.
Okay.
Right. And these are, I've tried to structure them and rewrite them. But, okay, now, the first question is from myself, really. As we've talked beforehand, and you've mentioned in excess of 18,000 lives, which is a great accomplishment, have you any favourite lives and why?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, obviously, Master Chow is a particularly comfortable life.
Yes.
But not comfortable as in wealth and glamour and all of modern-day idea of comfort. But
yes.
Comfortable as in the saying, the comfy old pair of slippers, yes?
Yes.
So it's a lifetime where I was who I was. I spoke what I needed to speak. So from a point of view of a good communicating life, it was a good one to use as a persona for speaking to humanity.
That's wonderful, and I can understand why you say that now. And going on from those lives, have you had lives in different eras, or has that been restricted in some way?
Oh no, all over the place. Well, I mean, Master Chow, as a lifetime, predates your Christ.
Yes.
So, okay. And that was not a new life. That was, you know, sort of going back a bit, but no, I have spread the eras, as you say.
Yes, yes. Because I think people are quite fascinated, and perhaps others may not understand that when we incarnate, we can choose a period as well that's beneficial.
Oh, now, don't lead them astray. Okay. Because that then starts to make them think they have a lot more control than they do. Because who is the they you are talking about?
Yes, it would be the, I suppose we could call that the incarnee.
No, the incarnee in that sense would be your soul. Your soul is not what does the choosing. Your spirit being, the actual being who is sending down the incarnee. I like that, incarnee, that's a good word. That one does all of the choosing and all of the arranging in coordination with other beings that it is going to have cross paths with.
Okay, right. That's very interesting. So do you feel that we have some choice, or is it more a mode of these are experiences you need at this particular time or era?
But time isn't important to us. We have no time in spirit. You all get so hung up on time down here because you are living this linear pathway. We don't. For us, all time is simultaneous. So the timing, as in which decade or which century, which millennium, that is more fluid for us.
Okay, that's wonderful. Okay, now, next question is, have any of those lives been what we might consider today to be in the future? That you may...
Oh, I see, along your timeline, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, now that's a question I cannot answer.
Okay.
Mainly because none of your business. We don't want to start giving you all ideas that are not helpful. Of course, time for spirit is simultaneous, so the lives are not consecutive.
Okay, and I completely understand why you've said that, and bless you for that. How do we come to choose the lives that we are living? Because I should imagine some would be for various experiences, some would be that we feel that there is a particular need to help in a particular way. Perhaps not changed the world, but certainly have an influence on it.
Well, hello, ego. How are you?
Yeah.
Firstly, you have to step back from the idea of I.
Mm.
How do I choose? How did we choose? You're talking about the wrong I and the wrong we.
Okay.
The spirit being organizes all of that in accordance to what it is trying to learn and achieve.
Yeah.
So the soul will come down either with a sense, with a set of things it wants to learn in this life.
Yes.
But some of the fine detail of the hows and the whens and the do's, we have to allow for free will. You have free will. We have to honor that.
Yes.
So there is a structure that the soul is trying to follow. But free will can turn and twist it and create all manner of deviations to it. So the life you are living may not be in flow with what the soul has structured.
Yes, I understand. Because again, I think we can sometimes be so immersed in ourselves, ego, as you say, that we completely deviate.
Absolutely. But negativity can deviate you. Consciousness on the collective level of humanity is drastically deviating a lot of you. Chaos deviates you. There's lots of things that keep pulling you backwards and forwards across the pathway. Yes?
Yes, yes.
So if you come from the point of, why did I choose this life I'm living? You have the wrong perspective.
Yes.
So firstly, is the life you're living in flow? Is it what the soul is trying to create?
Yes.
If it is, then that is what was prearranged.
Yes.
If it isn't in flow, then that's not the life you should be living.
Yes. And I feel what a lot of listeners may ask then is, how do we know which path we should be following?
Well, most of the time, be careful who is asking the question. Because if the ego is asking the question, the ego will often misdirect with an answer. Yes. So, firstly, is your life in flow? That's the first question. If yes, good on you. Well done. Keep going.
Yes.
If no, then you have to start coming through basic ideas here. And it is a process, really, of starting to stand still. Because the momentum of life is so fast now, you're mostly all playing catch-up.
Yes.
So, firstly, stand still. Assess. Take a hard look at your life. All of it. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the, oh my God, what was I thinking?
Yes.
Okay? Then start to consider, what do I want out of life?
Yes.
Okay? Because what you want, most likely, is what the ego is trying to create.
Yes.
So that's not flow.
No.
Once you started to look at want, then you need to drop down and start to look at, what do I actually need?
Yes.
Because need is of the soul.
Okay. Makes an awful lot of sense. When we come here, do we choose to bring special gifts for either personal accomplishment? You yourself obviously worked through Sarah, who became a trance medium. So I would imagine that some of that has been ordained in some way, allowed to happen.
Well, allowed. Prearranged. There was an agreement with the being that this lifetime she would once again do this work.
Okay. Yes.
So, but she still had free will. The vessel could have said no, could have walked away, could have stayed on platform doing your Auntie Nelly is fine. Because she was very good at that, you know. But no, this was a calling that the soul had by agreement.
Yes.
And I was one of a short list, of energies who had agreed to work through her.
Yeah, it gives a wonderful imagery in the way that you say that. And I believe that everyone has a psychic ability.
Of course, you're born psychic. It's part of your physical structure. It's just part of your survival instinct.
Yes, absolutely. And so, some have gifts which can be developed more.
Okay, so I want to stop you there. You're using the classic G word. Gift. Now, stop calling it a gift. Because it could be a gift, but for other people it could be a curse.
Absolutely.
Because they are not in the right frame of mind. They are not in flow with their life. They choose out of free will not to want to do it.
Yes.
So all the idea that it is a gift puts so much pressure on people and also feeds ego. Oh, I have a gift. I'm special. No.
Yes.
This was merely part of what was possible for this lifetime. So it's a skill, not a gift.
Okay, that puts a very different perspective on it.
Of course.
Of course, some of us choose to enter this life as complete skeptics as well,
of course,
don't we?
And very valuable that is too, because if there is no complement, then there is no harmony and balance. Because a good skeptic will keep a good medium in check.
Yes, absolutely.
Checks and balances.
One of my philosophies is I never try and change people, or convince them.
No. If someone is a skeptic, they are meant to be a skeptic. Mm. Not anybody's job to change them but their own, because they have free will. They can choose to change. No one else should be trying to change their mind. But equally, the skeptic should not be trying to change anybody's mind either. It works both ways.
That's where I sometimes have a battle of conscience. I'm trying to keep to my side of the line, if you like. But obviously,
If they don't want to stay on their side of the line, then they are the ones who have to deal with the consequences.
Absolutely, and I feel personally they do quite a lot of damage, because that they the people that may be bordering on is this right, do I want to investigate it, of course they have free will in mm-hmm. whether they choose that finally, but they can be influenced quite heavily.
But if they can be influenced by a skeptic, then that was always the direction they should go in.
That's fascinating. Another question, having so many experiences in being born, can you talk us through what it's like from spirit's point of view and what it feels like for you when you incarnated as a child, the actual experience of it?
So the actual birth canal woohoo moment, yes?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's an odd one to ask a dead man, but okay, let's see. Firstly, I think you need to deal with the moment at which the soul enters the fetus, because there is a range of timings for that. So the experience changes depending on when the soul enters the fetal state.
Yes.
If it's right very close before birth, it's very different to if it's earlier on during the pregnancy.
Yes.
It's generally, though, after the first trimester.
Yes.
And obviously needs to be before the final moment.
Yes.
So experiences change depending on whether the soul is inside the embryo, fetal, what baby, however you prefer to call. So
yes.
You start with that sense of heaviness because obviously as spirit we are weightless completely because
yes.
we are just energy that is conscious.
Yes.
So coming into a fairly inanimate object as a baby is, it doesn't do a lot of moving, is... can be quite a shock to the soul. This
yes.
is why a lot of times souls will come into babies who aren't ever going to touch the earth to get used to that sudden change in physical weight.
Yes.
Because
yes.
it's quite a shock. Okay?
Yes.
So it's kind of the reverse of waking up out of a coma, you know? Because everything changes. Everything has altered. Your whole senses are all very, very different.
Yes.
Also, it's suddenly very isolated. Within spirit, because we are all energy conscious together, we are very collectively connected.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereas here, there is separation. So there's quite a shock that the soul has to go through.
Yes.
Then, of course, there's all the screaming starts.
Absolutely. Make sure everything's working.
Absolutely. And in a sense, we... come in with that tidal wave of sound. This is why sound is so important to spirit. Sound is so primal for physical beings as well as for energetic beings. It's a vibration that's so strong that even the soul then gets carried away in the sound. So allows the soul and the fetal baby to come through together. So no
yeah.
separation or fragmentation. They start functioning as one. Yes?
Yes, that's a fantastic process, isn't it?
Oh, yes, we're very clever. The design is quite good, you know.
Yeah.
You have to bear in mind, spirit have been doing this for a very long time. So though we haven't always been coming to humans, we've done other life forms prior, we are kind of used to how this all works.
Yes, yes.
So...
And I understand what you say about the heaviness, because sometimes when I've gone into trance myself... and then you come back, there is that kind, almost a sort of numb, tingling sensation and the heaviness of the limbs. It is a shock, isn't it?
But also a disorientation.
Yes,
you know,
very much.
You have a thing on Earth now, people like to do it, the sensory deprivation tank.
Yes.
It's a very good way of trying to understand the different depth of perceptive reality. Not the actual experience per se, but the depth of change.
Yes.
If they put themselves in one of those tanks, and then when they come back out, that shift of alter, yes?
Yes.
Just gives some idea of what we are talking about.
That's interesting. I think I'd like to go through that myself, actually, because...
It's quite good for trance mediums to do that, to push their own sensory needs. Because if you go into that... look at what senses are crying out to be satisfied.
Yes.
Because that will tell you what senses are interfering when you're trying to be a vessel.
That's fascinating. I would never have put that together at all. And bless you, thank you so much for that. I've had some flashbacks in my life, and this happens when you're a medium and mm-hmm. you reach a point where a blockage rises to the top and has to go. Mm-hmm. The question that's been asked is, what has it been like to die in some of your experiences, or Master Chow's, if that's more relevant?
Well, Master Chow died of old age, quite lucky, 102. So,
wow.
Fell asleep, goodbye. So, really not much of a death in that sense. You know, Master Chow was very fortunate to have a life where he was very complete.
Yes.
So, very content. That's why his teachings were so of that sense, yes?
Yes.
But
yes.
Some of the other lives have not died so prettily, you yes. know. We've had some pretty horrific ones from a human perspective.
Yes.
But the thing is, the soul doesn't remember that in the same way. The flesh experiences it more than the soul does. And yes. it is the soul that carries on after all. So the soul tends to be much more of an observer of it rather than an experiencer of it.
Yes, and this is what I try to explain to people, that, you know, because so many fear the pain and mm-hmm. All those sensations. And again, I say, you know, well, there may be to a point, but when the passing is imminent,
then
that goes away.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. There is, though, to be fair, to ensure that we don't generalize things that are so important,
yes,
an exception to that. And yes. the exception is the sudden, unexpected death.
Yes.
And there, that peace space, if you like, is shorter.
Yes. And people sometimes talk about, you know, in the war, when a shell would go off, and maybe the first shell of that particular battle, and it just takes lives. And there's a great deal of disorientation, isn't there?
But that's not a very good example.
Ah,
because...
Okay.
Again, you see, this is where humanity kind of, you're all too rigid in the way that you think.
Yes.
Because though the soul has a path which it is trying to walk, it also has agreements to be party to certain undertakings.
Yes.
So, because we have to factor in other people's free will. And because war, on a small scale or a large scale, is part of human nature.
Yes.
Then there has to be a written understanding that they may be involved in that. So
yes.
that then isn't sudden.
Yes, I understand. Absolutely.
So sudden yeah. would be an actual act of chaos, unpredictable act of chaos.
Yes.
So walking down the street and a piano drops on your head. It's an
yes.
absolute act of chaos in that moment. Bad
yes.
timing, you would always call it. Chaos, we would recognize it as.
Yes.
That is so sudden and unpredictable that all of the predictability is too close. So the soul will have a little bit more of a jarring in those instances than in a war.
Yes, yeah. Because I suppose in a war you're in that environment and you get used to it.
But there's already agreements that are flowing underneath that the soul is recognizing. So the soul is already in preparation for the potential.
Right, that's fascinating. We have a great deal of free will.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I understand it is that there are certain accomplishments through life, and there's free will as to how we reach those difficulties and accomplishments. How much free will do we have?
Oh, you have a lot of free will, because it's nothing to do with spirit.
Yes.
It's not yeah. our requirement. It's nature's requirement. It's the physical world's requirement. Its own lore, if you like.
Yes, because again, some people, you know, that they have a reading here or a reading there, and the greater possibility that something's going to happen or is given, and they, of course, operate free will, and then mm-hmm. they say, oh, well, that didn't happen. And,
no.
you know, that they tend to blame the givers of information rather than themselves.
But equally, why are the questions being answered in the first place? Because they are an experiment in Schrodinger's cat. Because
yes.
the whole point is all of those possibilities are potentials. But mm-hmm. every microsecond you make decisions that change which path you go down. Any
yeah.
prediction of the future to a degree is pointless.
Yes.
Because in making the prediction, you ultimately change the future anyhow.
Yeah, that's what a great answer that is. Another question, it's kind of joining together the two of those and the answers that you've given. Mm-hmm. Some people seem to be born to cause problems for others, maybe start wars. And I know that spirit looks at things in a very different way, mm-hmm. you know, in an unemotional, mm-hmm. detached way, because for spirit, it's just experience. Mm-hmm.
Are we thinking of Hitler?
Amongst others, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because I think the problem is that they look at Hitler as an evil man.
Mm.
Well, firstly, he was not evil. Because evil, again, is a perception of an idea rather than a state of being. But you have to understand that the soul that was within Hitler the man had to walk a path that was about change.
Yes.
It was always a catalytic, that's not a good word, is it? A catalyst for change.
Yes.
Much as the tsunami that occurred on Boxing Day, yes?
Yes.
Some
yes.
events are about creating a wave throughout humanity.
Yes.
Now, because of free will, because of chaos, the wave of change he created was far greater and far more extreme in suffering than it ever needed to be.
Yes.
But he was a change maker.
Yes.
And he was also about getting people to come around to the idea of accepting each other more.
That I understand. There's an awful lot of empathy that comes out of those
absolutely,
actions.
Completely. Yeah. And he, as a man, is carrying all of the guilt and all of the blame for it, which isn't strictly speaking true. He had a lot of people around him who were even more deviantly minded than he was.
Yes.
But he always carries all of the consequence for it.
Yes.
That isn't always fair.
No.
But the amount of change across the face of your world, not just Europe, is because somebody had to act as a catalyst for change.
Yes.
And he was the catalyst. Now, had he been walking his path in flow, then the change would have been lesser.
Yeah.
And would have not had such terrible loss of life.
Yes.
But there would have always been loss of life.
Yes, yeah.
Which all of those souls had agreed to participate in.
Yes, that makes perfect sense, bless you. Another thing which is sometimes, it's very much questioned here in various ways, and we seem to be going forward to the acceptance of euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
What is Spirit's view of that?
You have free will.
Mm.
But one of the greatest lessons you can learn, and Hitler, again, is a good example of this, it's the value of life.
Yes.
What value do you put on life? And if you value life, do you not then also have the right to decide when your life is not living up to that value?
Yes, because, again, it's a funny, I was going to say a quirk or a twist of nature,
mm-hmm.
Especially the English, for whatever reason. We're known as great lovers of animals, and mm-hmm. we're often, in that sense, much kinder to animals
in having
them put down.
Yes, but there's a difference. You take responsibility for their life when you domesticate them.
Yes, yes.
But you don't take responsibility for your own lives when you insist on you wanting to live forever.
Yes, so, I can't think of anything worse, to be honest.
Quite frankly, absolutely. You know, I think 102 was pushing it, quite frankly. But on other lives, I've only lived a matter of minutes. So there is a balance to be made. But if you want to live a long time, you have to honor the life. You have to take responsibility for it. And surely part of that responsibility is also choosing with free will how to finish it.
Yes.
Not end it. Yes. Finish it. To close the chapter. Every author gets to write the end of the story the way they want. But why
absolutely.
Don't you give that right to your own life?
Yeah. I was having a conversation recently and they used exactly the same expressions. We are the authors of our own life.
Absolutely.
And we should write what we... Mm. Well, they said one, which is kind of ego.
But it's also, to a degree, I think... You have to recognize that certain illnesses are about the learning they bring, and they are predetermined. And a lot of the motor neuron diseases in particular,
Yeah.
These are predetermined illnesses. These are not spontaneous.
Yeah.
So that person, as a personality, has a soul that knows what that illness is going to bring.
Yes.
So, of course, the personality must have free will as to how it finishes. Otherwise, yeah, wouldn't we be cruel?
This is very much the feeling that sometimes, you know, we as the illness gets more and more serious, mm-hmm, we are stuck in a body that is, for all intents and purposes, useless, racked with pain, unable, mm-hmm, to do anything. So, mm-hmm, yeah.
But there is so much learning to come out from pain, for a start. The way you manage pain is appalling. You, yes, tell yourself that things hurt when they really don't. So you have no understanding of pain anymore.
Yeah.
You also have no understanding or appreciation of your physical bodies anymore. You abuse them left, right and center.
Yes.
Either through ignorance or through lack of attention or through denial. You're not living in your bodies. So these illnesses are a stark reminder of how fragile a vessel you are walking around in. And actually, you know what? Appreciate it a bit more.
Yes, I found myself, because I did martial arts for a while, and, mm-hmm, as you train, you build up, you get you gain a lot of control over pain,
mm-hmm,
which is quite amazing.
You do, absolutely,
and,
yes.
You know, for myself, I'm very much against overuse of painkillers,
yes,
because a lot of people forget that pain is there for a reason. It's telling you something.
Wrong. Absolutely. It's a very necessary marker, a neurological marker that is important that you keep.
Yes.
But to come back to the point of euthanasia, the big problem is how you perceive we will judge it.
Mm. Yes, yes.
And we don't at all. It's the same whether it is a termination.
Yes.
By choice or otherwise. Whether it is a suicide.
Yes.
By choice or accident, or, yeah, whether it is euthanasia. As long as the person has an agreement within themselves, an understanding within themselves, we have, yes, no issue.
That's fine. Because some people, you know, if they've been married for a long time, for instance, you know, you do hear of people, the term is dying of a broken heart, and they, yes, literally just switch off, don't,
yes,
they?
Yes, absolutely. And that's how powerful your own minds and your own free will is. You asked how powerful your free will is. Well, there is a perfect example of just how powerful it is. They choose to no longer live.
Yes. Now, those who kill, mm-hmm, it's an often asked question, you, mm-hmm, know, where do they find themselves and do they understand that they've done wrong?
Well, they haven't done wrong.
Mm.
So change your perspective.
Yeah.
Firstly, soldiers kill all the time.
Yes.
But you would never say a soldier has done wrong. They were following orders.
Yes.
So be careful about the idea that just because you take a life means that you have killed.
Yes.
Okay? There are doctors who put down animals all the time. You don't say they kill. That's acceptable. We just discussed euthanasia and that it would be all right. You wouldn't say that those people had been killed.
No.
So,
no.
You have to be careful about what you are identifying. It always is to do with the value of life. Always. Even a soldier's duty will have a lesson underneath it about the value of life.
Yes.
So if someone is down here to learn about the value of human life and how precious it is.
Yes.
They will have to learn that from all the different aspects of it. Okay.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
In one incarnation, they may be the person whose life is taken.
Yes.
In another incarnation, they may be the person who takes the life.
Yes.
In another incarnation, the family member.
Yes.
And so on and so on. And in originally, you also had the executioner in this scenario too.
Yes.
Who used to take life for a living. They were, yes, different learning aspects of the same lesson, the value, yes, of life.
Yes, yes. Okay? Okay. Another question that's often asked is the purpose or reasoning behind deaths. Where do children go in the afterlife?
The same as where all souls go. They come into reflection. They cross over to spirit and enter into reflection. Because the soul still needs to reflect on the experience, no matter how the passing has occurred.
Yes, or how brief.
How brief. It doesn't matter. there is no time for us, so every moment is precious.
Okay. Right. The next question, really, you've kind of covered, so we're going to skip past that. And the other one you've kind of touched on, but I think people would be very interested anyway. Mm-hmm. It's, do you have any thoughts about what will happen to the Earth in the future? And again, there's a huge scope of millions making free will choices.
Well, it's a problem, isn't it? Because yes. Who do I answer on behalf of? Do I answer on behalf of spirit collectively what we are hoping for? Do I answer on behalf of the collective consciousness created by humanity which is driving you into extinction?
Yes.
Do I answer on behalf of the human beings and what you should be doing? Or do I answer on behalf of Mother Earth, the planet, and what would be in her best interests?
I sometimes think she'd be a lot better off without us, actually.
Well, that is her choice, though. She has free will, too. And the point is that at any time, she could annihilate you. She only has to blow up Yellowstone Park, and bye-bye, humanity will be gone. So, ultimately, any answer to the future is only the possibility that each component can start to take better control of what it is doing and act more responsibly.
Yes.
So there will be a tipping point at which Mother Earth will simply have had enough of your decimation.
Yes.
And may have to decimate your population accordingly.
Yeah, we have been extremely cruel to her, unfortunately.
But you're cruel to yourselves because you overpopulate.
Absolutely.
You are living beyond your means, literally and figuratively.
Yes, it's there's such crazy materialization, materialistic thoughts, isn't there? That we need 10 hamburgers a day, and we need this and TV, and we don't. We'd actually be much better off just living more simply.
Yes,
but there's kind of madness in the air.
There is. But humanity has to take control of what it is responsible for. And you are responsible for your population. Because you have to remember, you are part of the animal kingdom. And all members of the animal kingdom regulate their own population with regards to the biosystem, the ecosystem they inhabit.
Yes.
You are the only animal that does not do that.
Yeah.
You simply move like locusts to somebody else's patch, decimate it, and move on again.
Yes, and as you said before, that it's kind of the basis of wars, isn't it? It's just greed.
But you must change that. So Mother Earth can bring it to an end anytime she wants. Yes. Humanity has to take control of itself and start to decrease your population increase, and ultimately decrease your population because you are simply reaching tipping point.
Yes, and I think a lot of people that perhaps may not be into spiritualism or the afterlife, they obviously see that from a different direction, but there are many more people that are coming to that realization. Some people are allowed or have the ability to see in the future. What kind of purpose does this achieve? You've kind of brushed on that already.
Nothing. Not really. In the grand scheme of things, it serves no purpose. It is merely just a reflection of a moment, because time is fluid. It's no different to seeing a reflection in a lake. It serves absolutely no purpose. It's just energy and light.
Yes.
You wouldn't try to gather up the reflection and keep it.
Yes.
But you do these reflections, these images, these snapshots of the future, you try to nail them down and hold them and give them importance and relevance where quite often as not they have none.
Yes, and I can understand from what you said before of, we make millions of decisions and we change it quite often. Yeah, so sometimes it just never resembles what was given at an earlier point. That was just a snapshot, as you say, of a possibility.
But equally, a lot of the time, it's symbolic, not actual.
Yes,
yes. And then you misread the symbol and don't recognize you're already doing it.
Yes, I was made aware before that some people don't know the difference between psychic and medium. Mm-hmm. And basically, a psychic will pick up on you, your aura, things that are around you, the energies that are there. Mm-hmm. And of course, some people, for example, in a way, this is a silly example, but it's one that everyone uses, so I do apologise. Okay. You know, people want to win the lottery. They want, mm-hmm. they want, and they manifest it in their aura, which and then, the psychic can see absolutely. The wish, but mm-hmm. not the actuality.
Correct.
Yeah.
All a psychic is doing, all psychic does, is you have to go back to the fact that you're an animal.
Yes.
Okay. And if you look at a herd of zebra,
yes.
one is always on guard, looking for the predator.
Yes.
And everyone assumes that that zebra is looking with its eyes and its ears, but it's also looking with its energy. Yes. It's feeling, is there a change in the energy around it? Because things move at an energetic level.
Yes.
It's using its psychic ability to sense danger.
Mm.
At a very basic level, that's what your psychic ability does. It's how your predecessors were able to not get run over by saber-toothed tigers and these sorts of things.
Yes.
And how they knew that fire was pretty but dangerous.
Yes.
Okay? So the psychic, first and foremost, is tempering itself. It's measuring the world around it on a threat assessment.
Yes.
But then it gets more sophisticated and it can start to read more detail. That detail then gets processed through your aura and through your consciousness into pieces of information, symbols, knowings, senses that should be useful to you. What a psychic is doing is taking that one level further and deliberately tuning in to try to read those vibrations and understand them.
Yes.
But it's like trying to understand quicksand.
Yes.
You know it's sand, but you also know you will sink in it.
Yes.
But you still want to try and stand on it.
Yes, yes, it's rather like, you know, when a parent tells a child something is hot, that there is no understanding.
Nothing until at all. Until you experience hot. You have no correlation to it.
Yes.
So all of those wishes and dreams, all of those things you do with your cosmic ordering, oh dear, sits in your aura, and psychics just come along and will pick out the loudest screaming piece of information.
Yes.
That's going to be the first piece of information that hits them. The bit you've put the most focus and awareness on.
Yes.
And then it goes into lesser degrees as it goes further through reading you.
Yes.
But that doesn't make it true.
No, absolutely.
Going to happen. Those are different pieces of information.
Yes. So many people, and again, it's the thing that people tend to mention in a very negative sense, is karma. Mm-hmm. And they tend to use, you know, when something happens, they go, well, that's karma for you. So they use mm-hmm. it in a negative sense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a very positive sense as well.
No, there's just one sense. It's neither positive nor negative.
Ah.
There is just karma.
Yes, I think it's people's connotations with it, you know, mm-hmm. that are...
Yes, yeah. We are very familiar with the idea of karmic debt.
Yes, yes. And what sort of part does karma play?
Karma plays very little. Karma is merely there to explain to you the scenario we had with the person taking a life. Karma just says you will experience it from every side. So don't judge, because you judge the man who takes a life, but for all you know, in another life, you took his.
Yes, that is the thing that so many don't understand, do they? They and I think that's why Jesus said, you know, judge not, let you be judged.
Absolutely.
Because we have no comprehension.
No, because you are basically living an experience in a snapshot.
Yes, yes.
Your moment is a drop in the ocean to what that spirit being is experiencing across all the lifetimes. That's the picture of what you're learning. Yes. Not the snapshot of the one moment that you are remembering or experiencing. Now, I don't want to devalue your experience, because you're having that experience. It's incredibly valuable to you. Yes. But you cannot use that as a way of knowing how to judge others.
Yes, it's a very difficult thing to mm-hmm. try not to judge.
It is, but it's also a lesson that you have to revisit every lifetime.
Yeah.
So every lifetime that will be there, learning how to non-judge all over again, will be there.
Yeah. Does spirit have any opinion, or do you have any opinion on those people that presume to have these abilities and abuse those?
Which you mean the side?
From a mediumistic point of view, there are good mediums, there are bad mediums. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are some that have that ability but deliberately misuse it. And
I think you have to be careful that the bad mediums and deliberate users, it comes down to the conscious knowing of what you are doing.
Yes.
So a bad medium does not consciously know they are bad.
Yes.
They may truly, honestly believe what they are doing is genuine.
Yes.
That's very different from knowing deliberately what you are doing is fake and yes. deliberately setting out to con someone.
Yes.
But equally, it all serves a place within the grand scheme of things because they only exist because of supply and demand.
Yes.
If you weren't also hungry for it, they wouldn't have a profession.
Yes. Absolutely.
So they are a product of your collective want.
Yes.
So actually, they are not the problem. Your yeah. collective want is the problem.
Yes.
Because people are seeking answers outside of themselves instead of personal responsibility, loving themselves, knowing themselves, and therefore having inner counsel and not needing these things. So because you are all seeking answers outside and you're really not very discerning where you go.
No.
You are then creating a vibration that they are merely satisfying, cause and effect.
Yes.
Welcome to the law of cause and effect in all of its glory.
Yes, yes. And I think that's, again, something that so many misunderstand.
Yes.
You kind of covered this again, so I apologise for asking the same question. Is there a choice about whether we come back to this place, Earth, for another life, or can we just say, you know, I think I'm done with that?
Well, the soul in and of itself can ask, but yes. ultimately all of the decisions are with the spirit being.
Yes, okay.
So it's a one I've encountered many souls who have come to talk to me who say, I don't want to do this again. Well, the honest answer is your soul, that particle, never has to do it again.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean the spirit being won't keep doing it.
Yes, yes. It's a very different thing as a lot of things with spirit, you know, actually the belief and the truth are very separate.
No, now, to be fair, it's not about belief. Necessarily. It's about perspective.
Yes.
A lot of the answers you are trying to create are from the human perspective.
Yes.
So you always view us as the afterlife. And because you do that, you turned everything around to the wrong view.
Yes.
You have to remember, you come after us. We are where it all starts. So yes. all the perspective should be from what we are trying to achieve. Then everything would flow and all the answers would flow accordingly. But most of your answers are from the human perspective and therefore not complete.
Exactly, exactly. Again, you've touched on this about lives in other worlds, etc. What would be the truth of that or your perspective yourself?
Well, I knew the alien question was going to be on your list somewhere.
Yes, I've been there's teasing. Always one that asks.
Well, I was teasing Vessel all day. I knew the alien question was going to be there because humanity has such an obsession with them.
Yes.
I think what you don't recognize is you've transplanted aliens for God.
Yes.
Again, it's that seeking of an answer outside yourself, that there must be something that knows better than you do.
Yes.
So you have to be careful about why are you seeking outside life.
Yes.
If we are talking scientifically, purely science, of course, the idea that the human form is the only conscious life form in the multiverse in which you exist, which is far greater than your scientists have any idea of course, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
There has to be other life out there that's capable of holding consciousness.
Yes.
Is it parked behind Mars about to attack? No, of course it's not. it's billions and billions and trillions and Google millions away from you.
Yes.
Not really caring that you exist.
Yes.
On a science point of view, from a spirit point of view, you are currently what we are working with.
Yes.
Have we worked with other life forms? Of course we have. We've been doing this for eons of time.
Yes.
But you're the current one.
Yes.
And we really wish you would start considering yourselves to be far more important. Because yes. You all want to be star beings and cosmic beings. What's wrong with being a human being?
Yes.
You all want to remember your spirit, but you've forgotten you're human.
Yes, yes.
And really, if you don't start remembering you're human, the whole thing will fall apart.
Yes, there are lots of pitfalls there, aren't there?
Yes. Firstly, you are a human being. If you can remember that and anchor to that, then you can connect to the fact that you have a soul, which is a spirit being. Then you start living your life outwards from there. It's a far more balanced and caring place than what you are trying to do now, which is ripping yourself away from everything that grounds you.
Yes. Can we learn anything we want to in heaven? Some people have dreams here of, you know, they want to be a famous musician, or they want to have a high achievement. Life gets in the way of living. They never manage it. Are those things possible?
You have to explain your question a bit more. Do you mean once they've come back to spirit?
Once they've come back to spirit and they had a yearning maybe to learn an instrument they never did here.
Okay, once they come back into spirit, all of that disappears because we have no instruments up here.
Yes.
So that's all just a human part of that life. So right. It may have been that was a potential for this life that they didn't fulfill. So what? They'll do it another lifetime.
Right, okay.
But no, they don't come into spirit and then learn the cello. No.
Okay, okay, that's fascinating. So many people here talk about, as you have yourself, talking to angels and mm-hmm. Having those connections. Mm-hmm. And of course, that they often wonder, am I going to meet angels in heaven? And there would obviously be a much closer connection because they'd be in spirit, so it's closer from that point of view. But they often ask about meeting angels.
Well, you would potentially meet your guardian angel.
Yes.
Because your guardian angel and your guides will be there to help the crossing over from the physical into reflection.
Yes.
Whether you meet any of the other flashier ones, well, that depends on what the spirit being and the soul need. If in reflection the soul needs a visit from Michael or Ezekiel, then perhaps they will come forward to assist in reflection.
Yes, that's fascinating. And the other thing is as well, and I know people do this with guides as well as angels, mm-hmm. they seem to want to abdicate all responsibility.
Yes.
By saying, you know, my guide's not taking care of me, this has happened.
Yes. Well, personal responsibility, it's a lesson.
Yes.
You learn every lifetime. It has to come back to that. You are here to live the life. You have to live it.
Yes.
So, yes, when you hand your power over to us, I'm afraid at some point we have to hand it back. And that isn't always pretty.
No, absolutely. We've talked before about the trance healing that mm-hmm. you do.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your feelings on that? Because we seem to have been really hung up on so-called modern medicine, which in reality has only been a few hundred years mm-hmm. old. You know?
But modern medicine has its roots in the fact that your planet always provides what you need.
Yes.
So all of the herbs, the plant material, all of that was there to
yeah.
treat the illnesses that you had that were within a life.
Yes.
Those that were preordained, so like the motor neuron.
Yes.
Those are out of life.
Yes.
So no, obviously there wasn't a medicinal route for those because they were not conjured within your world. Does that
yes.
make sense? Yes?
It
so
does.
Your viruses and your bacteria are conjured within your world. Therefore, all of the treatments were within your world. Please notice I say were.
Yes.
You have sadly destroyed a lot of them.
Yeah.
So medicine, modern medicine, is only an extension of that.
Yes.
Of using the materials of the world around you to take care of yourself. And surgery and these are aspects that have flown from that, which are great and very yes. useful. But they only treat the physical body.
That's the problem, isn't it?
And sadly, the treatment of the mind has gone through ups and downs, but has never really achieved a high level of understanding.
Yes.
That really is there to be achieved.
Yes.
So the mind has had a look in, if you like, but has always been downgraded to below the body.
Okay. Yes, yes.
But worse still, your emotions have been downgraded even further.
Yeah, the mind has a wonderful capacity to justify anything, doesn't it?
Yes, well, but so does the...
I don't know whether that's a fortunate or unfortunate.
But a lot of that is the collective consciousness that's driving humanity away from what humanity needs. It's your own creation. All of your thoughts, which are an energy cohesing together to its own consciousness. Modern medicine will always have a place in your world, to a lesser or greater degree. I think there are boundaries at which it shouldn't cross, though I suspect it will cross.
Yes.
And that may therefore be something humanity has to learn from. It creates a learning that will be valuable when it comes, but doesn't need to come.
Yes.
You need to do more work on understanding conditions of the chemical structure within the mind, because that is an increasing problem because of the way you are living your lives.
Yes.
But spiritual healing was about balancing the basic energetic structure that you are. The reality that your soul coming into the flesh alters your energetic structure.
Yes.
To a structure unlike any other animal on your planet.
Yeah.
It's far more complex than any other animal. So spiritual healing was always about helping that to become more cohesive, because so much of your world destabilizes it, your emotions destabilize it, your mind destabilizes it, and a lot of your synthetic drugs destabilize it even worse, and some natural plant-based products destabilize it. Trance healing is now about moving beyond that to the fact that because you have become so destabilized, your souls are also becoming destabilized.
Yes.
So we are working energetically at a far greater level to be more cohesive across the whole system. So we're not concerned about a broken arm or a cyst.
Yes.
You have doctors for that, and they are brilliant.
Yes.
Mind, if it's chemical, no. Go and see people who can affect the chemicals.
Yes.
We are more to do with the emotions, the soul, and the entire energetic structure in depth as a cohesive whole.
Yes.
And this is very much where spirit have the advantage.
Yes.
Because we can see it all as one cohesive organism.
Yes.
Which, from your perspective, of course you cannot. You're not designed to. You're designed to see the human vessel, secondary, the basic energetic, but not more than that.
Yes.
So this for us very much is where we would like to see the trance healing go, to working in this much more subtler, deeper levels to help re-cohese the organism, to, because it is a symbiotic relationship. We always think you have a TV program about it, don't you? Where life imitates art, is that
yes,
the saying?
Yes.
So if you look at a lot of your media, entertainment, yes?
Yeah. Some call it entertainment.
You are currently fascinated with zombies. So there's an interesting reflection back to humanity.
Yes.
And the symbiotic idea is a reflection. It's in your media. The soul and the human flesh are having a symbiotic relationship, and that has to be held together in a very delicate balance.
Yes.
And that is where we would like to see the trance healing coming in to assist more.
Yes, that's wonderful. I have a theory, and a great percentage, maybe 80% or more, of the mental illnesses that are in the world are spirit influenced to one degree or another.
You need to explain that a bit more. What do you mean by influenced?
I mean negative influence or people that have the ability but not understanding it and it's right. taken advantage right. of.
Okay, yes, a percentage of mental illness may actually be misplaced or misguided spirit communication.
Yes, yes.
But do not get caught up in the figures, because mental illness, as in the chemical imbalance of the brain, is also on the increase.
Yes, yes.
So you cannot put it down to all of one or all of the other. But yep. yes, a percentage of mental health issues are not chemical imbalances in the brain, but external influences from the unseen.
Thank you. There are a lot of people that do Reiki and other mm-hmm. forms of healing. Mm-hmm. And to me, there is a balance between them all. You know, sometimes a particular angle of healing may be slightly better in one sense. Mm-hmm. But people have this competitiveness, don't they? Mm-hmm. That this is better or that's better.
Well, that's the ego. Hello.
Yes, yes.
And we also have noticed now angelic Reiki and other words being put in front of the word Reiki that were not there before. You know, Reiki was Dr. Insui's invention and his yeah. creation, and he was no angel. I met him. Not as Chow, obviously, but in yes. one of the other lives, I've met him. A very yeah. nice man, but no angel. So always there are adaptations that humanity needs to put, because so many of you are coming from a place of lack.
Yes.
That you are trying to fill that lack with all of this very special language. But you have to be so careful with it, because it's only making the lack worse.
Yeah, I feel, to be honest, much of it is to do with marketing. You know, mm-hmm. if we make this different, then mm-hmm. people will, I suppose, ultimately come and pay me money and train in that way.
But it's still, you know, lack. Yeah. It's still coming from the lack of trust that the thing itself is good enough.
Yes.
If you believe in Reiki and the power of Reiki, why change it? If you believe in spiritual healing and the power of spiritual healing, why change it?
Mm. Exactly. It's what you feel more comfortable with, isn't it?
But it has to be your knowing and your belief that it's true.
Yes. Absolutely. There's a lot of talk now about physical mediumship and that kind of uh-huh. thing. And we know that spirit can manifest in light, and they do on occasions. yet physical mediumship seems to be stuck in the seance room. Uh-huh. We have technology. I feel personally, partly from the way that I teach myself, mm-hmm. that if we begin to use different energies, that we can begin to have materializations or transfiguration okay. in daylight.
Hold on, I'm going to stop you there.
Yes.
Humanity are missing one key thing.
Yes.
Why? Why?
It's the want for proof, isn't it?
But it's your want.
Yes, absolutely.
So why should we fulfill your parlor trick to satisfy a want which is yeah. not balanced?
Fantastic answer.
So if you can come to a point where there is a need that we agree is a need, we will of course satisfy it.
Yes.
Now, you have to remember, with traditional original physical mediumship, there was a need. Yes. We needed to get home the reality very quickly, because yes. you had lost touch with your spirituality courtesy of the Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
So your spirituality as a whole, as a people in all countries, had shifted with technology away from it. Yes. We needed to shift back. There was a need.
Yes.
So physical mediumship became more prevalent because it was actual. Once that yes. need was satisfied, we went back to more traditional ways. Bearing in mind, transmediumship is the oldest of them all.
Yes.
Yes. But there was a need. So mental mediumship then came to the forefront because of so much loss of life because of the two world wars.
Yes.
The trance simply could not cater for it.
Yes.
But it was only meant to satisfy the need at that time. It's now become supply and demand. We are yes. a victim of the thing we created, that you now won't let it go.
Yes.
But now you want to go back to something even older that we've already let go of. Why? Yes. Why should we do it?
Yes.
If we have no need, if it is not serving a purpose for humanity, how are we honouring what we're trying to do for you?
Yes, that makes absolute perfect sense. Absolute. And that leads on to another question, which I often, I wouldn't say change my mind about, but I have different impressions of. And perhaps in an ideal world, if everybody reverted to their own spirit and listened, there would be no need for mediums as such.
Very little.
Yeah.
There would always be a small amount of need for those moments when you're really, you need clarity and you need confirmation. But yes, it would diminish dramatically. You have to remember that as an animal, you lived in packs.
Yes.
And as a pack, you always had a wise person.
Yes.
Often a female.
Mm.
Always, every small community or tribe had a wise person.
Yes.
The medicine man in Native Americans, the wise women, the shaman. That
yes.
was your conduit for that information when there was a need.
Yes.
One too many within
yes.
the community. Now you have many too many.
Yes. Yes.
The need, as the need changes, the many will change.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So many people here ask for light and want to make the world a better place. And
mm-hmm.
often, as you know, it's a small bunch of influential people,
mm-hmm.
politicians, whatever, lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
How can we make the world a better place or try and influence for the better, if we put it that way?
Well, but better for who? Better for you as an individual? Better for the starving African? Who is the who you are trying to make the world better for? You can only affect change in your own life.
Yes.
Bring your life back into balance. Step back into flow. That has far more power to change the world than anything else. Because it's a ripple effect. The more of you that do it, the more of you can do it. The world will change unrecognizably. But if
yes.
you try to force change from a place of imbalance, which is where you all
yes.
you are going to create is greater imbalance.
Yes.
Light attracts luck.
Absolutely. And we've got a last question here.
Mm-hmm.
And I do apologise. It's probably something you're asked a million times.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sitting comfortably.
And, you know, people ask, you know, which is the best way to make sure we get to heaven, or perhaps what their idea of heaven is. And I often think it's just, you know, try and live a spiritual life, help people.
Oh, hold on. Well, stop there. Stop. Hold on a second.
Mm.
You can't be banding around the word spiritual.
Yes.
Because not everyone is here to have a spiritual life.
Yes.
Some of the souls that are here to have a physical life with no spiritual content.
Yes.
Because that's what they're learning from. They will still go up to spirit.
Yes.
Some of you are here to have spiritual lives with no physical content. You will all go back to spirit.
Yes.
The spirituality isn't part of key to going back to spirit. And notice I won't use the word heaven, because
yes.
that is a religious idea. That is
absolutely
not where you go. Okay?
Yes.
It's what you imprint on where you go. That's very different.
Yes.
You will all go back to spirit. End
yes.
of.
Yes.
How you live your life affects how you live your life.
Yes.
Not how you exit.
Yes.
You're all going to go back to the same place.
Yes.
But the moment is now. If you do not like your life, if you are not happy in it, change.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't wait because heaven is going to be wonderful. Change
yes.
now and make now wonderful.
Yes, I think one of the problems with religions is that the basis is spirit, but man gets involved and makes changes, you know. And
you
it's
have
that
to
control,
be careful because
it?
It's control. A lot of religion is control. Unfortunately, religion also brought in guilt and sin, and a
yeah.
lot of these ideas that are ways of controlling people,
yes.
and it's again become slightly too big for purpose.
Yes.
Have faith in yourself. That is key.
Yes.
Step back and allow the soul to be in control because it knows what it is doing.
Yes.
Go back into flow. all the rest of these questions then become irrelevant. Because if you're in flow, everything will be as it is meant to be. It will all move forward at an even pace. Everything you need will be supplied. So actually take a step backwards instead of worrying about what the next step forwards is.
Yeah. Again, you know, there's a correlation there between wild animals and that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the earth provides everything they need.
Yes.
And essentially, as you touched on before, we've altered that. We've created a great imbalance there. Mm-hmm. But if we were to perhaps not revert, that's the wrong word. But if mm-hmm. we were to be more understanding as an animal, mm-hmm. then, you know, I think we would all be better off.
But I think you've become too superior.
Yeah.
Humans have put themselves above everything.
Yeah, and we have a superiority complex.
You do. You have the ultimate God complex amongst you, because first you were superior to animals. Now you are layering it within your own superiority, that even now you are beginning to touch on severe God complexes within a lot of humans. Yes?
Yes, yes.
None of that is truth.
Yes, yes.
At truth, your flesh is part of the animal kingdom. Your soul is part of the spirit kingdom.
Yes.
That is a nice word. We don't use kingdom a lot when we talk about spirit. We tend to use world, realm, or plane. Yes. Actually, I think in this instance, kingdom works, because there's the king in there feeds your ego, which you need to have a little bit of ego or you get upset.
Yes.
You have to remember that you've chosen to be here.
Yes.
Honor that choice. Acknowledge that choice.
Yes.
Personal responsibility, self-love. From there, everything is possible.
Fantastic. Is there a last message that you'd like to give to listeners?
I think mostly to remind them that though we are here to help.
Yes.
You have far more power to help yourself.
Yes.
And all of the assistance that comes from spirit should be about reminding you of that.
Yeah.
Should always be about giving you back your power.
Yeah.
And if so-called spirits are talking and they are not giving you back your power, please do not be swayed by that.
Yes.
Because that voice is not helping you.
Yes.
You have free will, which is incredibly powerful. You have a soul which is incredibly knowledgeable. Allow it to do what it's here for. It can manifest everything you need. It can flow your life far better than any magic pill.
Yes.
Yes. It doesn't require rituals. It doesn't require anything but your willingness to allow it to be in control.
Yes.
From that point, everything can drop back into sync.
Yeah.
And little by little, your world can drop back into sync. But you have to be mindful that your egos are running amok. Even within the spiritual movement, there is a lot of ego.
Yes, without mentioning any organizations, but that is absolutely true.
And that,
unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but it's supply and demand.
Yes, yes.
And this is a truth here. The more you want it, the more someone has to satisfy that want.
Yes.
But you need to come out of want back into need. Do I need this?
Yes.
Your soul will always tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Where anyone else can lie to you, your soul will always tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing to remember. The power is with you, not us dead people.
Yes.
And not a lot of the other living people, to be honest. It's with you. First and foremost, you. You are the center of your world.
Thank you very, very much, Master Chow. Welcome. As always, a real pleasure talking to you.
That's okay.
And thank you for answering those questions. And I'm sure there are many, many people interested in those answers that you've given. Thank you so much.
I hope I have been concise. I have tried.
You have, as always.
Good. So on that note, then, I say goodbye.
Goodbye, Master Chow.
And God bless.
God bless you. Take care.